Thank you for giving me a chance to have a seminar here as a newcomer. And I slightly changed the title of my talk, which was nonlinear monopoles, but I add here, because this is mostly on the non-commutative monopoles, which is a monopoles in a non-commutative space-time. And I want to, the main point of my talk is the brain realization of this non-commutative monopoles. And at, in the steps to realize the brain configurations, there appears some nonlinear BPS equations. So I write previously nonlinear monopoles as my title. I want to summarize my study in this whole year, which was initiated by Aki Hashimoto, who was here, but he's not here. And I want to talk about mainly on these three papers of my recent ones. The first, I want to explain my motivations, and I will give some introduction to this non-commutative and non-linear monopoles. And then I will proceed to the brain configuration of non-commutative monopoles, and then I will solve the non-commutative and non-linear BPS equations exactly. And using the cyber-written map, I want to explain how these different many pictures are related with each other. And then when solving this nonlinear BPS equation, I will use some transformations. And it is turned out to be the symmetries of DBI action. And I want to explain this. And if I have time, I will proceed to the some new solitons, which is proper to the non-commutative description. First, as an introduction, I want to emphasize the importance of the non-commutative space in string theory. And that arises very naturally in string theory, for example, in some vacuum of string theory. Now, this is because that the string has an extent of the length, so its interaction intrinsically becomes a non-local one. And in some situation, that non-locality will be translated to non-commutativity of space-time. So this string, the nature of the string is intimately related to the non-commutativity. For example, Yonea proposed some space-time uncertainty, which he said, which is a principle to derive some string theory action. But this space-time uncertainty is analog of usual Heisenberg algebra, so this is intimately related to non-commutativity. Or, for example, the matrix theory, in the matrix theory, which is proposed as a non-perturbative definition of M theory, in this M theory, matrix theory, the intrinsic construction of, for example, D brains in this theory is due to the non-commutativity of matrix. But today I want to concentrate on the specific non-commutative situation in string theory, which is given by constant B-field background. If you consider type 2 theory, there is a B-field, which is two-form, NSNS2-form, as a low-energy excitation of that theory. If you turn on this D field as a constant background, then if you put these D brains on that background, then the low energy description of that D brain has a non-commutative theory. This non-commutativity, introducing non-commutativity, is turned out to be very useful in various situations. For example, that includes solitons of string field theory that corresponds to D-brains. On the other hand, solitons in field theories can be realized by a string theory technique, which is usually called brain configuration technique. For example, the instantons in Yamil's theory can be realized as a D0D4 bound state on this D4-Glenn low-energy effective field theories. Or, for example, monopoles are realized as D1-Glenn suspended between several parallel D3 planes. On these D3 planes, there is a non-Averian gauge theory, and put D1-Glenn between them gives some monopole configuration in terms of field theory. Or more interestingly, using the Glenn configuration technique, the generalization of this monopole can be found. So string theory predicts some new solitons in field theory. That is 104 BPS solitons, which is realized as string networks connecting these parallel D3 planes. So in this way, the Glenn configuration technique was turned out to be very useful in analyzing solitons. So combining these two situations, which was very successful in string theory, I mean this constant B field background to represent the non-commutative gauge theory, and this soliton realization technique, I want to analyze monopoles in non-commutative gauge theories. I mean, non-commutative gauge theory itself is very interesting as a new theory of particle physics. And monopoles are very important ingredient in that theory. But using these techniques, this can be analyzed in terms of string theory. So before proceeding to the details, I want to briefly explain how the non-commutativity arises in string theory. This is maybe well known to you. The non-commutativity can be introduced using the B field, as I said, and using some T-dualities, we have very many equivalent description of this situation. For example, let us consider a rectangular torus compactification and put D1-Glenn here. And this is a B-field background. So I write this direction is x1 and this is x2, so B12 is turned on as a constant.
So the one brain is perpendicular to the torus, is what you're saying?
Yes, D1 is in this way. Then take the T-duality along this x2 direction. Then this picture gives this. Now taking a T-duality, we have a D2 brain in this way. But now the T-duality exchanges the metric G mu nu and B mu nu along x2. Then this rectangular torus bends in this way because G12 is a constant, non-zero. And now there is no B field. Let us consider the interaction on this D2 brain. Then you see that the winding mode start here and end up with here. So the end point and starting point is different. So this is the lowest energy state of the winding number one string. And let us consider this interaction between these winding modes. So let me put another string here, like this, and join them here. Then that gives a winding number two state. But the important thing is that these two strings has a different center of mass coordinate. So this interaction is non-local. So as a consequence, consequently, if you take the Fourier transformation in this direction, the winding number becomes a momentum, and then it gives some non-local interaction theory. So this gives some effective description of these winding number state gives a non-local theory. But it turns out that this non-local interaction is a Moyle product, and that is coming from the non-commutative field theory. So this is a non-commutative field theory. On the other hand, you can take the T-duality twice along this direction. So then you have a usual ordinary description with B field. But this B field is different from this B field. The value is different. But this is not, this has a usual interaction which is local. But this is equivalent with this. So these two descriptions are equivalent. So in that sense, the ordinary field theory with B field is equivalent to the non-commutative field theory. This is the explanation first given by Douglas and Fu. And now let me define the non-commutative theory. The definition is very simple, and this is definition of Superyama's theory on non-commutative space. So you see that the difference between the difference from the usual Yamanaka's theory is only this star product, which is defined in this way. Now you see the theta parameter, which specifies the non-locality or non-commutativity. But this is non-commutative multiplication because F star G is not equal to G star F. So using this star product, you can define the non-commutative theories for any theories which was considered before. Now, one must note that even if you consider the U1 gauge theories, this U1 field strength includes some non-Abelian-like terms because these are not these are not commutative, so these are not vanishes. So using that set, the equivalence I explained before, this, Seibert and Witten proposed some more concrete correspondence between two descriptions. Actually, this non-commutative Yamil's theory is equivalent to the D3 brains in the background B field while taking the low energy limit alpha prime is equal to zero. But one must scale the metric and string coupling and B field like this, where theta is fixed and G hat Yamil's is fixed. The Hartree variable like this is indicating some quantities in non-commutative theory. Now the precise correspondence is given by this. This is called Seibert-Witten map. The hatted gauge field that is in the non-commutative space is written in terms of ordinary space gauge field. Firstly, this was, this relation was given by the differential equation in terms of theta, so it can be solved perturbatively for small theta. So I write explicitly at the first non-trivial order. But this order is very complicated.
Can one put that explicitly by solving the, well, you had this picture where you have either the Fourier transform or the additional T-duality.
Yes.
You actually just track that map and get this relationship?
No, it's a bit different. Defined. This map is derived by comparing the gauge transformation for both sides. Mm-hmm. If one transform the gauge transformation on the non-commutative side, it should correspond to the gauge transformation on the other side. So that relates some, that is called gauge equivalence principle, and you can solve it in this way.
So what happens, so you're saying you can't sort of directly track from one side to the other, say, the, and see how the gauge potential transforms, or say without
I think
be
it's
able to construct a map directly.
Yes, I think it's impossible because this involves with T-duality that if you want to T-duality in a, for example, supergravity situation, you can smell out in that direction. So the information along this direction is absent in this way. Now my aim of this talk is considered non-commutative monopole that is deformed by the usual BPS equation. Well, this is the usual BPS equation for monopoles in ordinary theory. This is magnetic field and this is a derivative of a scalar field. And if you put non-commutativity, then this becomes a non-commutative BPS equation with hatted value. Now you see that this is covariant derivative different from the ordinary derivative. But in the same way, you can deform this by a B field. And this gives usually a nonlinear BPS equation, which is deformation of this, this equation. I can write the precise definition of this nonlinear BPS equation later. But these two are conjectures to be related by that cyber-Witten map. Now, this situation, non-commutative BPS equation, was solved by David and Nikita. And now I want to concentrate on this nonlinear BPS equation and solve it exactly. I think this is solving this equation is more important than this because here's here David is absent. That is because if you want to write want to have some brain realization of this non-commutative monopole, then you can write the figure using the Higgs, the value of Higgs. But this Higgs is not gauge invariant because this is a joint representation of the UR non-commutative theory that receives some gauge transformations. But this scalar is a gauge invariant. So you can write some brain configuration definitely.
This is the U1 gauge theory?
Yes.
Wait, so you say the if you use one version of the cyber-Witten map, there are more invariants? That if you
just think of mechanical fast, presumably. Let's go.
This is a specialty of U1 case. So
okay.
In that so case, okay. Yes, singularity is as right.
You're going to hear what you say you have an observable scalar on the right hand side, the gauge invariant. What do you think you know what that maps to?
Yes, that means the cyber-Witten map is gauge variant.
Right, but you have an observable on one side that should map to an observable gauge invariant on the other side. I'm asking, do you know what that maps to?
To say frankly, I don't know about it. Because to define some gauge invariant values, quantities in the non-commutative theory is very difficult. Mm-hmm. Maybe, but this can be a hint to have such a.
Interesting. Yeah.
Now I want to explain some schemes for realize the solitons in terms of brain configurations. This is a very familiar one, but I want to review it. Let us consider this configuration in type 2 string theory. This is D1 brain, D string, and it is stuck to D3 brain. This is a perpendicular. Now, this situation can be realized in terms of field theory on this D3 brain in this way. This is a figure which plots X9 field. This is a world volume direction, and this direction is x9. Now I put simply x9 equals 1 over r, which is conjectured to be equivalent with this picture. So the reason is as follows. So first, I put a monopole here so that this configuration satisfies the BPS equation. So as you see, this monopole has a magnetic field like this. This is because D1 brain is couples to the Ramon-Ramon two-form field, which can be viewed as a monopole in the world of gauge theory. Which can this fact can be viewed as can be derived from the explicit low energy D brain action. Furthermore, this these strings breaks half of the supersymmetry which was preserved by the these three planes. And this was reflected by the fact that we construct this configuration by solving the VBS equation. Furthermore, this string has a tension. And if you compute the energy of this system, which is of course infinite, but if you introduce some cutoff here and compute the energy of this configuration, then this energy is turned out to be proportional to the cutoff, the distance from this cutoff and this Riemann surface. And the energy per unit X9 length is turned out to be the same as D1 blade tension. And further, a very interesting feature is that if you fluctuate this soliton, then this has some definite Dirichlet boundary conditions up here. So this indicates that if you want to have some BPS monopoles in field theory, you can consider this situation in the Blaine configuration. But now I want to consider non-commutative monopoles. So this is simply available by putting the D-string ending on D3 plane in the B-field background, because this is equivalent to the non-commutative theory. So the BPS equation becomes this. This is because in the D-plane action, the field strength is combined with this B-field due to the gauge invariance of this B-field. So if you want to introduce the B-field, then add this term at the field strength. So this is a BPS equation, and you can solve it very easily. So the difference is only this term, so this gives us some linear behavior in phi. And writing the figure, I have this situation. Now X is a linear, X has a linear behavior, so the D3 plane slants in this way. This is unchanged, so this is a spike part, and that represents this string. But actually, this D-string has a tension, so I'm afraid that this D-string will move due to the tension, because this D-string is slanted in this way. But I solved the BPS equation like this, so this should be stable, because this is BPS. So how this is stable? The answer is that the tension of these D-strings is precisely balanced with the magnetic force on the end of the D-strings. As I said, the end of the D-string is considered as a monopole on the D3 plane. So this monopole feels the magnetic force in this direction due to the B-field. Therefore, this is balanced and BPS and stable.
So the string is no longer perpendicular?
It is at an... Yes, it is perpendicular.
It's not
but
an angle.
Now this ring is slanted.
Sorry, what?
No, these are not perpendicular with each other. You said, with the angle given by B. Now this simple Blaine configuration gives some interesting observation on non-commutative U2 monopoles, for example. And this work was done by Aki, with Aki. Let us consider the U2 monopoles in the non-commutative space. So from the argument above, the stable configuration is like this. You put two D3s in order to reproduce produce the U2 gauge field, and then put D1 brain suspending between them. Now, as I said, this D1 brain have an angle with respect to these three planes. They are not perpendicular with each other, and this is stable in the B field. So consider that this is whole of this figure is in the B field background. Now from this figure, you can compute the energy of this monopole. Of course, that is given by the energy of D1 brain. But in this situation, one should note that there is a potential energy that is coming from the endpoints of D1 brain. Because this is in the uniform magnetic field, these two endpoints feel some potentials. So this gives some contribution to the mass. And taking the alpha prime zero limit and using the Seiberg-Witten map, then this quantity can be represented by the, for example, G hat Yamils or theta. But it turns out to be that this quantity is not depending on theta. So that means that the non-commutative monopole is exactly the same as the ordinary Yamils monopole. The mass is the same. This result is verified by recently Davy. He constructed some exact solution in non-commutative U2 monopoles, and that U2 monopoles give the same mass as the ordinary Yamils monopole. But new prediction here is that due to the slanted this ring, there is a non-locality of the monopole. So the monopole is non-commutative gauge theories have some non-locality along the theta directions. Now I want to proceed to the exact solutions of a non-linear BPS equation that is in the ordinary side. For simplicity, I will concentrate on the Dirac monopole, which is in U1 gauge theory. The solution of the ordinary field theory, which will be equivalent with the non-commutative theory, should be localized because it is a soliton. But now I'm involved with the U1 gauge theory, so the energy is infinite, but it should be localized. So that means the fields should vanish asymptotically. But as I said, the solution of the ordinary gauge field with B field is this, or was this. So you may see that this term does not vanish asymptotically. So something is wrong. So what is that solution? And what is a non-commutative monopole, which is localized? So this is actually resolved. This question is resolved by considering some another supersymmetry. Well, that linear BPS equation I wrote before is derived from the linear BPS equation, which is usual BPS equation, which is usual supersymmetries. But the Dirac Bonnefeld theory has another supersymmetry, which is realized nonlinearly. So combining these linearly and nonlinearly supersymmetries, we have some BPS equation which is different from the linear BPS equation. So this is precisely the same as the situation of non-commutative instantons, which was discussed by Seiberg and Witten. So let me derive the nonlinear BPS equation from those supersymmetries using the Dirac-Bonnefeld theory for monopoles. So this is the action, and here you see the field strength, and this B field, and this is a scalar field. And I omit the Fermionic parts. This theory has supersymmetries, and especially for the gauge enos. This is the usual supersymmetry, linearly realized. But there is another supersymmetry which is written this way. So this is very complicated. And usually there is no B field, so if you put F equals to zero, then this is preserved, but this is broken because of this 1. But now you, we have a B field, so both of these are broken. But some combination of these two are preserved. Now I want to describe some monopoles, so I will put F, substitute F in this expression, and I only turn on 1-2 direction B field. Then the supersymmetry condition is the a certain combination of these two supersymmetries becomes 0 for the variation of gauge genus. Noting that F goes to 0 at the infinity, that is a localization condition, then this two supersymmetry parameters are related in this way. So let me substitute this expression for the combination into the this explicit expression of the supersymmetry transformation. Then I have a VPS equation like this. So this is coming from the linear supersymmetries, and this is from a nonlinear supersymmetry. So substituting explicit expressions for the F and B, then this can be reduced to this equation. So this is called nonlinear VPS equation. And of course, for instantons, there the nonlinear VPS equation was found by some people, and it was analyzed. And now I want to solve this equation. But this is highly nonlinear, because if you want to solve this equation, if this is a linear VPS equation, there is no such complicated term. So bi equals to di phi, so putting this relation into the Bianchi identity gives some Laplace equation for phi. So you can solve as a phi equals 1 over r or something like that. And now you have these complicated terms. So of course, it is possible to solve this in terms of b and put it into the Bianchi identity. But that gives this really complicated equations. So it seems that this is very difficult to solve. But before solving it, I can of course solve it by a small b case. So in that case, there is a cyber-Guitton map between small a non-commutative description and a commutative description. So I can check the cyber-Guitton map. Now, let me solve the non-commutative BPS equation to the first order in theta. This is a non-commutative BPS equation, and the solution is very simple if you assume that theta is very small. So this is the non-trivial part. This is the 1 over r part. And of course, David solved this exactly. So if you expand their solution with small theta, then this expression will come out. Now you can perform the cyber-Guitton map to this solution using this expression. Then you obtain this expression. Actually, a very simple calculation shows that this cyber-Guitton mapped solution satisfies the nonlinear BPS equation in small theta. So this configuration is called as nonlinear monopole. But more than that, this the non-commutative BPS equation is mapped to nonlinear BPS equation for small theta using this expression. So this shows that the nonlinear BPS equation is equivalent with the non-commutative BPS equation. Well, let me see that closely this solution. This solution can be arranged in this way. Now you will see two phis in both sides. But I assume that theta is very small, so you can expand this in terms of theta and solve it for phi. Then you have this expression. So this can be arranged in this way. This means that If theta equals to zero, this phi is one over r. But now if theta is non-zero, so the location of the center, that means monopole, the location of the monopole, is depending on the value of phi. I mean, the center of phi locates at this point, but it depends on the value of phi itself.
Theta is dimension phi, right? It's length squared.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So when you say small theta, it's small compared to what?
Compared to alpha prime.
Compared to alpha prime.
Yes.
Even though this is a purely field theoretic discussion, I mean, that's... I mean, looking at those two terms in the expand, I mean, the second one is small by theta over r squared, basically, or actually g theta over r squared. So what I was wondering is, I mean, I thought maybe you would say that the expansion number is something like theta over r squared.
So yes, you're right.
Okay, good. So then this is a good description sort of far out in the monopole.
Yes,
getting
yes.
close to the core, we'd have to go
Yes. But the point is that the center of the one of our behavior can be viewed from the asymptote.
Far away.
Yes.
Good.
Yes. Yes. So if you arrange the solution in this way, you can see that this monopole is precisely representing this part. Because if you go up for phi, then the center of the spike is going away from the original point. Therefore, this means that we have three pictures of a non-commutative monopole. The first one is the solution of non-commutative supermodules, that is VPS Dirac monopole. And the second description is a nonlinear monopole, which is given by the cyber with the map from 1, this one. But there is a third description, which was this picture. You can add this term B naively and solve it, and then this is obtained. The point is that if you want to have the second description, this is the description. If you want to have the second description, you can rotate the figure in this way. Right? So this is horizontal, and this D string is now tilted. But this naive expectation turned out to be very exact. This is a very interesting point. So this is the picture. If you perform the target space rotation defined by this, mm-hmm. this is a field, but this is a coordinate. Mm-hmm. So this rotation is very unfamiliar one. But you can perform this rotation. And of course, the coordinate x3 will change to a new coordinate x3. So this is involved with some diffeomorphism. Mm-hmm. But using that diffeomorphism, you see that this rotation erased two solutions for small theta. Mm-hmm. And actually, this rotation also transforms the nonlinear BPS equation to the linear one, really surprising. Noting that, as I said, accompanies some diffeomorphism like this, so gauge field should be transformed in this way. Then this nonlinear BPS equation can be mapped to this linear BPS equation. So we know the solution of this equation, so we have the solution of this equation. Now I want to summarize the results of the table, in the table. There is three descriptions in this way. This is non-commutative description. The BPS equation usually comes from linear supersymmetries. And we don't know how, what is the brim configuration, because this is gauge variant. But if you go to the commutative ordinary descriptions, then we have two descriptions, which is a naive linear supersymmetry is one, and this one is coming from this, this using the cyber-Lewis map. These two are related by target space rotation, and the break configuration is simply the rotated one.
The different supersymmetries that you talked about before, are they just, they're also related by some rotation? They're supersymmetries?
No, it's not. So the naive expectation is that, but if you closely look at the derivation of the nonlinear supersymmetry, nonlinear DPS equation, that is this, one simply assumes that F goes to zero asymptotically. So if you change the value of the asymptotic value of this F, then you, of course, you can get linear DPS equation. So that is simply the difference of the asymptotic value of the fields.
This rotation changes the asymptotic.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Only change the asymptotic value, but this is actually commutative with this supersymmetry transformations. The rotation is commutative with these supersymmetries. First, I was very surprised by the fact that these, the complicated nonlinear BPS equation can be mapped to the linear BPS equation. But this is actually have a very simple reason. Well, the point is that the BPS equation can be viewed as some self-dual relation in the Dirac-Bonnefield theory. So I want to explain that. The Lagrangian I'm using is this, and in the vector field notation, this is written in this way. Now, this vector B is defined in this way, and this is the magnetic field. And let me, this action has, of course, self-duality, but it cannot be viewed in the Lagrangian formalism as usual. So I want to change this into a new action by the Legendre transformation with respect to the this Bianchi identity. I introduced this Lagrange multiplier chi, and let this action can be written in terms of chi and phi. The result is this action. This action has a SO11 duality symmetry. The fixed point of this duality symmetry is, of course, chi equals to phi. If you assume chi equals to phi, then this transformation gives the same solution.
This is similar to how you would say take a D2 brain action and reveal it as an M2 brain action. Chi would be the coefficient
yes.
in the M theory, right?
Yes, sure.
Yeah, here you have a 3-brain. It's a 3-brain, right? You're on a 3-brain, so it's not.
Yes.
So this chi is not an M theory coordinate because you're in the 2B theory.
Yes.
Does it have any comparable physical interpretation?
I mean, there's a problem. There's an epsilon. Your VI, you say, is an epsilon IJK.
Yes.
But on a 3-brain, you have 4-dimensional.
Is it spatial?
So you fixed, there's some preferred static time that...
Yes.
Just dualizing the space?
Yes, I only consider the static configurations. And that...
It's okay. So it's almost like... It's like if you ignore the time direction, it's almost like...
A 2-brain.
Yes.
Okay. Then I might have assessed, then the SO2 would be natural because you'd be rotating into the M direction. But this is actually SO11. In fact, are you sure of the signs? I would have really expected an SO11, an SO2 symmetry.
Yes, this is SO11 because, for example, you can consider this theory without phi, and this is the usual volume field action, which has an SO2 duality symmetry. But if you add some scalars, that has a opposite time with compared to the electric field. Okay? So this should be SO11.
Wait, eta 0, 0 is minus 1, right? Time?
So this. This is now minus 1, plus 1, plus 1, plus 1.
Okay. Okay, I'm sorry, I'll believe you. I'm just surprised. But I see very similar, though, to the hidden Lorentzian bearing to that theory.
Right? Yes. So you see that this self-duality relation chi equals phi is actually this linear BPS equation when written in the original language. So I can rewrite the nonlinear BPS equation in terms of chi and phi. So then this gives this relation.
Sorry, what is special about chi equals phi?
Yes, this is a fixed point of this SO11 symmetry. So usually duality is discrete symmetry. For example, in the Maxwell theory, you can replace E by D. So if
it's not fixed point, it's just
yes, it scales out, but it's not fixed point accurately. Anyway, in terms of this kind of phi, the nonlinear BPS equation becomes very simple. So this is this, and this similar to this, and you see only the constant vector field to add it to them. So this is a simple expression of a nonlinear BPS equation, and which can be viewed as a we have a geometric understanding of that relation. So actually, we have a SO41 symmetry, which is very big, instead of SO11 and a target space rotation SO4. This SO4 rotates phi and x1, x2, x3, and SO11 rotates chi and phi. So these, if you combine these two, we have SO41 symmetry. This can be viewed as follows. That Lagrangian I wrote before, this Lagrangian, is arranged in this way. Now, the index I and j runs from 1 to 3. As you easily see, this is a minimal surface action in the static gauge, so this can be lifted up into the form before the gauge fixing like this. Now, U is 5 scalar fields, and L runs from 1 to 5, and this generalized metric is defined in this way. So this is x1, x2, x3, and this is for phi, and this is for chi with this sign. So in this big symmetry, you can perform the rotation considered before, that is this. So this rotates only this part. And of course, leave other coordinates intact. So after the rotation, this self-duality condition becomes this. Because phi check is simply the combination of phi and x3. Now this is the nonlinear BPS equation that runs this. This one. So in this way, we can have a geometric understanding of the nonlinear BPS equation and see that if you want to solve this, then you can perform simply this rotation in this big symmetry and solve this. That this is very easy to be solved. Now I end up with the interesting solution of nonlinear BPS equation, and I have some time to be left, 5 or 10 minutes. So I want to briefly explain my recent work on the BPS solitons proper to non-commutative theory. So the solutions of non-commutative monopoles, which I discussed before, has another description in the ordinary theory. But some solitons in non-commutative theory has no corresponding solutions in ordinary theory. In that equivalent, the equivalence of the Seiberg-Witten map becomes singular and broken. I want to explain that a new soliton. First, to work in the non-commutative space-time, I want to introduce some operator formalism. The non-commutative space is like a phase space like this. So you can define the creation annihilation operator. This is annihilation operator, but creation annihilation operators. And this space is represented by the Hilbert space. Now, in this formalism, all fields on this space is represented in terms of operators like this. Now, there is a remarkable way of soliton generation technique, which Parkrose explained 2 weeks before, is this. Now, consider operator U and its Hermitian conjugate U dagger that satisfies U dagger U equals to 1. However, U dagger is not equals to 1. This is almost unitary. But using this almost unitary operator, let us define the transformation on fields phi and the covariant derivatives. Then, due to this relation, the equation motion is intact. Because now, in the operator formalism, the equation motion is written in terms of some polynomials of these phi and d. So this can be mapped in this way using this relation. U dagger U cancels out between the fields. So del S over del phi I equals 0 remains intact. But as you see, the U dagger, which is other combination, is a projection operator due to this relation. So if you choose U, for example, as this, then this gives some generator which generates one solution to another solution. But generally, it turns out to be that this technique generally produces non-BPS solitons, not BPS. The reason is as follows, of course. Let me consider the U1 non-commutative gauge theory for monopoles. The equation's motion is this. So this equation motion is invariant under the transformation because this is polynomial written in terms of d and phi. But the BPS equation becomes this in terms of operator language. Now you see this 1 over theta term, which is constant. This is coming from the definition of VI that involves that includes some a commutator of derivatives. That derivative commutator of derivatives gives a constant term. So now BPS equation is this, and if you transform this BPS equation using the HKL definition, then of course these parts are invariant, but this receives some modification because this is changed to U dagger, but this is not changed. So this means that the first order equation is not invariant under the HKL transformation. So you cannot apply this method to give the BPS equation, a BPS solution. However, simply, if I define phi p equals to phi minus d over theta, then using this phi p, this constant term vanishes because this can be renormalized into this definition. So using this quantity, you can use the HKL transformation. This trick is due to the similarity of the norm equation of this equation with this equation. This is actually BPS equation for monopoles, but this can be viewed as a norm equation for non-commutative monopoles, which includes this term. But as people know, the moduli space of non-commutative monopole is equivalent with the ordinary monopoles. That is because due to this trick. So you can write the configuration space of this solution, these equations, is equivalent without this. So this means if there is no modification in moduli space by theta, then using these tricks, HKL method is applicable. So now it is the case. So using this phi p, let me transform the solution into a new solution. The simple solution to be transformed is this. The phi p is linear function, and d is almost annihilation operators. This is a solution of this equation. Let me consider specific values of these parameters. For example, let me take phi 1 equal 1 over theta and phi 0 vanishes. Then this indicates that in terms of original phi, not phi p, phi equals 0 and b also vanishes. So this is a trivial vacuum. But if you perform the HKL transformation to this solution using these entries, then phi will change to this and this. Here P0 is the projection operator onto the state 0. And if I write the figure of this, now I'm consider this transformation. First, the previous one is a vacuum solution, but performing the HKL transformation, it has some configurations. So this is precisely the fluxon solution, which was studied by David. This can be understood as a D1 brain piercing the D3 brain. Now, there seems to be very many variants of these solutions because I have two real parameters. For example, take phi 1 equals 0 and phi 0 not equals 0, then this gives this configurations. This configuration is simply the slanted surface of these three planes, but please note that the slope of this surface is equivalent with this slope. So this was this ring, so this should be this ring. So these whole of these these strings and not these three planes. And if you take that, perform the HKL transformation to this solution, you have this configuration, and plotting this configuration gives this figure. Yes. So this means one of the D-strings, for example this, is moved parallelly into this place. So this is a very interesting solution, which is not present in the ordinary description because the constant slope that is common in these three solutions is 1 over theta, at which point the Cyber-Witten map becomes very singular. The Cyber-Witten map can be integrated if the field strength is constant in this way. But if you substitute this value into here, you see that F, which is in the ordinary description, diverges. So there is no corresponding ordinary description solution. Now I run out of the time, so I want to summarize the conclusion. I studied the non-commutative BPSD Dirac monopole, and they have three different but equivalent pictures. And these 1, 2 are related by Cyber-Witten map, and 2 and 3 are related by the target space rotation. So you can plot the figure of a BPS non-commutative Dirac monopole using this figure 3. So this this transformation is exact. So you can solve the nonlinear BPS equation exactly. In addition to that, I considered some variation of the fluxion solutions, and that solutions are very proper to the non-commutative theories. Thank you very much.
Slide just before this one.
Yes.
They're describing these different things that they saw on the top.
Yes.
Is the configuration on the right just a target space rotation of the one on the left?
No, it's completely different because, as I said before, this is D3 brain, but this is D1 brain. The D3 brain is hidden.
You're saying it's a family of D1 brains?
Yes.
It's not a
tilt
of the D3 brain.
No. So this configuration is very simple, but this is not found in the ordinary field theories. Because if we want to put D1 brains in the field theory of D3 brains, the D1 brain becomes perpendicular to the D3 brains. So this is a very singular solution. But using the non-commutative theory, you can realize this solution.
I assume so. I'm not sure that.
We'll tell him what he said
about
it. Yeah. Koji, that was a very nice talk.
Thank you very much.
Really quick question. Do you know about putting, let me see, B field flux on F theory connect?
Yes.
That expression?
Well, yeah. I mean, I do.
I mean, for example,
I just read tomorrow. I thought I was gonna. Let's talk tomorrow on Creole. Okay. I actually thought I might not be here.
So some here, right?
Okay.
Yeah. But
yes, yes.
Can you check if it solves the nonlinear equation?
No, no.
That's a sort of B-flux.
It's different.
And then you go around the second brain.
It's different.
Different. But naively, at that first order in shape, this is correct. But if you consider the higher order, it's different.
So you can basically try to guess.
Yes, yes, at first.
To the solutions to vectors right now. Which means they will include
thank you very much.
Seven brains in general.
Can you go
they will include source
can you
five brains,
you
five brains meaning five brains wrapped around cycles that are actually
not good. I just want to
see there's a lot there.
Yeah, basically, you always have to do that to face
Mariana.
The non-commutative.
Has been looking for some explicit solutions, which she's been describing.
She gets
right
a solution of Necras.
Okay.
How complicated?
It looks weird, but.
The first difficulty is the.
So when you're in
the
second
map, it's very complicated.
My simple analysis.
Higher order in data. So it is maybe impossible to obtain that solution in the ordinary side using the non commutative.
So simple analysis. I can show you in.
The only way to get the ordinary sine solution is to solve the non-linear BPS equation.
Yeah,
and that is equivalent to the linear BPS equation. So you can rotate it. Then you can get the solution.
So
I
told you it
would
simple.
Well, it's really not.
I just wanted to see.
I see. That solution is written in terms of very simple. I mean. In the description 3, I said, this is this configuration, and the solution is simply 1 over r plus beta x, okay? And you can perform the rotation.
I see.
Then you have very complicated solution.
I see. So this is the solution of the linear BPS?
Yes.
And you perform the rotation, and
yes.
And you're getting non-linear equation for phi, right?
Yes.
I see. So you try to plug it in into the...
No. Because actually there are many branches of the solution.
I see.
Yes, it's really complicated.
It's like mean field, you know?
What is it?
It's like, you know, in solid state they have mean field approximation. You have similar kind of problems. You have magnetization on the left and on the right, and you have some nonlinear equations.
Actually, I don't know that. Would you let me know some references for that?
Oh, there is this book. It's a very good book by Vanier. He got the Nobel Prize. I think the name of the book is
Field Theory or something like that.
Statistical. Uh-huh. But the basic idea is that if you have a bunch of spins, and you put it in the magnetic field H, then they're going to orient. And so you say that the average magnetic moment of the system equals to the weighted statistical sum. So that's your Hamiltonian interaction of this given spin with magnetic field times the pi given magnetic moment. Now, in the mean field approximation, it's like self-consistent approximation. You say that when we impose field H here, you basically assume that this P is proportional to H. There is some constant which is K. So you get this self-consistent equation. You have H here. And you have H here.
I see.
And when you solve it explicitly, like typically near magnetization, near the, you know, the diagram for H as a function of temperature, usually goes like that. And this is the point where there is second order phase transition. Usually find that it's but this is like so you're, when you showed your equation it's very similar to the
I see. The nonlinearity.
Okay. You had a very good talk, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.